Shalom to all. We are studying today Parashat Behar. We are almost finishing the book of Leviticus, Vayikra, and we are in the book of Leviticus, the book of Vayikra, chapter 25, verse 1. That's when we start the parasha, and it goes this way. Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe Behar Sinai le'emor. And God speaks to Moses, where? At Mount Sinai, saying, Daber el Bnei Israel, verse 2, talk to the children of Israel, ואמרת להם, and tell them, כי תבואו אל הארץ אשר אני נותן לכם, ושבתה הארץ שבת לאדוני. When you come to the land that I'm giving you, and the land will have a sabbatical to God. Verse 3, 6 שנים תזרע שדך ו6 שנים תזמור כרמך ואספת את תבואתה. For 6 years you will plant seeds in your field. For 6 years you will harvest your vineyard and you are going to take all the harvest. And then verse 4, ובשנה השביעית, on the 7th year, שבת שבתון. It's going to be a sabbatical. יהיה לארץ, for the land. שבת לאדוני, שבת to the Lord. שדך לא תזרע, you do not plant seeds in your field. חרמך לא תזמור, and you're not going to do anything with your vineyard. Which means you cannot trim, you cannot treat it. את צפיח קצירך לא תקצור, it goes like, goes on like this, a sabbatical. Okay, and then, it goes like, and on the 7th year, your field does not belong to you, it belongs to everyone, everyone is allowed to come and eat from any fruits that will be there in your field, which is amazing, which means that the concept is very, very clear. And here it is. What does it say? It says in a very simple language, and we go to the Zohar about it, because the Zohar always makes it very clear about what the story is about. And the Zohar says, basically, it is about the fact that everybody can eat from the field since whoever owns the field is the creator. And he decided that every 7th year, everybody can eat from the field and from the vineyard or from the plantation, since that will remind you who really owns the land. You're not owning the land. By the way, we're not even owning our body. It's just on a lease. And to remind us who is the landlord, who's the land owner, just every 7 years we have a sabbatical. Okay? And then it goes farther, even farther, because, of course, there's the much deeper perception, understanding to that, and it goes even worse than that. I'm saying worse because, look, we know today how tough it is to just simply pay all the bills. Now, if you have this kind of a rule that says that every 7th day, Shabbat, you close the business, and you do not answer the phones, and you're not doing any business deals, no matter how important they are, you know, one day a week, you're not doing business. That is very stressful. Okay, then, to add on it, every 7th year, for the whole year, you cannot, and you know, remember the ancient times, most people were farmers. There was no thing like industry. Oh, there was people were merchants, but mostly people were farmers. And then on the 7th year, you cannot do anything in the farm. Okay, That's on the seventh year. But that becomes even harder. Verse 8, וספרת לך שבע שבתות שנים, and you should count seven sabbaticals of years. שבע שנים, seven cycles of 7 years, והיו לך ימי שבע שבתות השנים, 49 שנה. And these seven cycles will be altogether 49 if you didn't get it. Okay? And then, on the 50th year, ועברת שופר תרועה בחודש השביעי, and you should, verse 9, and then you should blow the shofar everywhere in the country, on the 7th month, okay, on the 10th of the month, which is Yom Kippur, ביום הכיפורים, and it says, on Yom Kippurim, תעבירו שופר בכל ארציכם, וקידשתם את שנת החמישים שנה, and you will sanctify the 50th year. And in Hebrew, it's called Yovel. Okay? In English, Jubilee. Yovel, Jubilee. You know, if you realize that Yerushalayim becomes Jerusalem, Yehudim becomes Jews, so the Yud becomes a J, so Jubilee is simply the original word in Hebrew. Okay? You'll have this 50th year. ותהיה לכם ושבתם איש על אחוזתו. Now, on the 50th year, it's even becoming more extreme. If somebody sold his farm because you wanted to change your business or because you had too many debts, stuff like this, on the 50th year, all the assets, all the lands, all the houses, it all goes back to the beginning. It's like playing Monopoly. And on the 50th year, everybody gets the cards again, like it was in the beginning, which means it's a kind of a mixed capitalist and communist regime. Yes, you have private property. However, you cannot play with it too much because every 50th year, all the cards go back to the same equality that it was in the beginning. Okay? But there's something important about it. We read Parashat Behar always during the counting of the Omer, and you cannot escape the making the comparison between 7 weeks getting out of Egypt, and then on the 50th day, it is Mount Sinai Revelation, the holy day of Shavuot. And here we have seven cycles of 7 years, and then the 50th year is the Yovel, the Jubilee. What's special about it? What is there anything in common between the two? The counting of the Omer, which means you reach after 7 times 7 days, you reach a Mount Sinai Revelation, which is the 50th day. Is, and here you count 7 cycles of 7 years, and on the 50th year, there's a special event, which is the Jubilee. Is there anything in common between the two dates? And the Zohar explains to us in a very simple way that there is something in common. We know that on the 50th day, every year, on the 50th day after the Exodus, we count the Omer 7 times 7, and then on the 50th day, which is the holiday of Shavuot, we have the opportunity to connect to the original force that has been revealed over Mount Sinai, and whoever taps that power can achieve at least for 1 year immortality. Which means, as the Zohar says, in the introduction to the Zohar, there's a whole essay on verse 125 and on, about the secret of Shavuot. And it says that on the seventh, on that day of Shavuot, whoever does the counting of the Omer and then studies the whole night of Shavuot, he can receive So much light that it is guaranteed that that person will not die that year. Okay? Now, what does it mean that year? Is it for the next 12 months or is it till next Rosh Hashanah? That's not the issue. The issue is that there is kind of a guarantee that if somebody has a decree of death over their head, Shavuot, you can touch that power, that even though you're carrying that decree of death with you or upon you, you can annul it and connect to life every year again on Shavuot. And here the Zohar is saying, when we're saying about it this year, we're talking about the Jubilee. The Jubilee is also connected to it because it says, when he, let's get the verse again. Okay, when we go to verse 13 in chapter 25, this is a very central verse in a whole issue, topic in the Zohar that is called the resurrection of the dead. And it says, in that verse, Bishnat Hayovel Hazot Tashuvu Ish El Achuzato. On this year of the Jubilee, you will come back each person to his estate. And the Zohar says, we are talking about that on the year of, or the time when the process of the resurrection will start, it all the details of that process is encoded in verse 13, chapter 25 in Leviticus, in this parasha, Parashat Behar, which means the whole story about the Jubilee has inside it encoded the power of reaching immortality, resurrection of the dead. And when it says that every person will come back to its asset, so when we're talking about the biblical Jubilee, the simple explanation, yes, every 50th year in the game of Monopoly, the game of capitalism, everybody gets back the same cards that he got in the beginning of the cycle. And then the cycle starts all over again. And that means that the Torah is saying, במספר, the next, you'll see that the Torah really meant it, וכי תמכרו ממכר למיתך, verse 14, when you sell your farm, your lands, to somebody else, do not cheat, because, verse 15, במספר שנים אחר יובל, תקנה מת עמיתך. You're not really selling the land, but you're selling, or basically leasing the land, for the number of years till the end of the Jubilee. Which means that the price of the farm will be different if you sell it on the third year of the Jubilee, because you have right now 46 years left to use the assets, or if it is the 40th year of the Jubilee, because you have only 9 years to use till the end of the Jubilee. So it's a different price, depends how many years are left till the Jubilee, which means when the Jubilee arrives, it's for the whole land. Okay, so basically, and so the Zohar says, you calculate the amount of yields that the land can give by selling the land. You calculate that. You're not really selling the land. You're selling the use for the how many yields this land can bear till the Jubilee. Okay? And then, so again, so we have something in common. Both dates are talking about this something on the 50th year or the 50th day after Passover, the 50th year of the seven sabbaticals. And there's something on that special year that has to do with freedom. And because it says so, really, verse And the Torah is giving even more details to that, so everybody can understand that it's not a game, and it's really precise about those cycles of 7 years and then 50 years, okay? And it's all about the symbolic, the symbolism in the Jubilee of real, true freedom, okay? And the whole parasha of Baal is about it. Okay, now, even slaves are being sold. They cannot be sold beyond the 50th year, which means if somebody, let's say somebody be sold as a slave because he has too many debts, he can be sold only to the 7th year. But what happens if he says, I love my master and I love being a slave. I do not want to be a free man. I do not want to play the monopoly. I do not want to play the game of taking responsibility for my budget, for my home, for my family. I want to stay a slave. I trust my master. I'm going to do the job, and my master, he owns me. He will take care about the rest. You can maybe skip the 7th year, but you cannot skip the Jubilee. On the Jubilee, everybody goes back to freedom, which means you have to take responsibility for the game, which is called, you know, economy. And that means you have to be responsible for your spendings, you have to be responsible for your income, and you have to take this responsibility, unless you give it up, and then you're being sold as a slave. Okay. But what is the deeper meaning of that for us? We will see that in chapter 25, verse 20, which is really important. וכי תאמרו מה נאכל בשנה השביעית. הן לא נזרע ולא נאסוף את תבואתנו. And you should say, if you say, in case you say, what would we eat on the 7th year? We cannot plant and we cannot harvest. Okay, what are we going to eat? And God says, verse 21, וציוויתי את ברכתי לכם בשנה השישית ועשת את התבואה לשלוש שנים. I'll order my blessing to you on the 6th year. So on the 6th year, you'll have enough crops to eat for the 6th year, the 7th year, and the 8th year. Why the 8th year? Because when the 8th year begins, you can only plant. Till you have enough food for the harvest, it will take the whole year till it grows. So, and it goes, וזרעתם את השנה השמינית, ואכלתם מן התבוע הישן, so you eat from the crops, old crops, till the 9th year, which means you'll have enough crops in the 6th year, so you can eat till you have the crops of the 8th year. Okay, that's an amazing leap of faith. What is the Torah teaching us over here? And let's go back to what we said in the beginning. In the beginning, when we just read what's on the two tablets, it says there about Shabbat. Shabbat, it's tough enough. Shabbat, you know, in many, many places around the world, Jews had always that pressure. Everybody works on Shabbat. In some places, Shabbat is the day people do most of the business. And I have to shut down my business just on the weekend when everybody else is making so much business. This is really tough. How am I going to be able to understand? And a lot of Jews for thousands of years could not get that leap of faith. What does it mean, leap of faith? I'll work 6 days. My competitors will work 7 days, and I will be able at least to compete with them. I won't be available on the 7th day. The customers will come and the business will be closed. So the business deals will be offered to somebody else. Okay? Everybody understands how tough is that decision to close down the business, to go home and forget about the business for a whole day. And it's not just this, in the winter days, the seventh day is starting early. Like, you have to close the business like Shabbat afternoon. It's afternoon, it's not Friday afternoon. So Friday afternoon till Saturday night, and it's a day and a half that you're not working. Tough. A lot of Jews along history could not withstand the temptation, and they simply changed it. When we talk about the Reform movement that started in the Central Europe in the 19th century, they simply moved Shabbat to Sunday. Okay, why? You know, we can't stand that. So we cancel Shabbat, and they canceled a lot of other stuff. But especially the first thing that was canceled was Shabbat. Why? Everybody at that time in the Christian world was working on Saturday. So I have to work on Saturday if I want to compete, because the economy became faster and faster, and a lot of people did not have the ability to cope with it. We have over here a leap of faith. Now, but we can see that along the last centuries, although Jewish businesses all around the modern world, we're talking about the modern world in the last, let's say, two centuries, and we see the Jewish businesses, although they were Orthodox, many of them thrived, succeeded, and they did not simply stop, get out of business. Somehow, in the competition of business, they survived. Not just survived, many of them more than survived. Many of them, although they did not work on Shabbat, they made more money than their competitors who did work 7 days a week. Or they closed like everybody on Sunday. Today, nobody closes on, you know, all the stores, everything is open 7 days a week in our modern world. Except then, you know, in Israel, there's some enclaves that open 7 days a week, but most of the country is closed for the seventh day. Now, and how do you deal with it? How do you explain it? And the Zohar is amazing explanation for that will help us to understand the secret of really true success, and how is that connected to immortality that we spoke about it before. These two issues, they are most important for us to understand. Okay, so the Zohar talks about this issue already in the beginning of Parashat Behar, and the Zohar says on verse 6, I'll skip the beginning because the introduction will go right to business. Verse 5 in the Zohar, Perush HaSulam. Tu patach Rabbi Elazar, ki tikne v'divri shoshanim yavod. Rabbi Elazar is quoting from Parashat Mishpatim. When you buy a Hebrew slave, he will work for 6 years, and then the seventh year, he will go free. בגין דכל בר ישראל דהתגזר, דהית בירשים הקדישה, אית לי נייחה בשמיטה. דהד אילי הוא ארוד דשמיטה, לנייחה ב, ודה יקרי שבת הארץ. ודאי חרו יתבע נייחה בה, כמה דשבת נייחה הוא דחולה, החינה משמיטה נייחה דחולה, נייחה הוא דרוחה וגופה. And what the Zohar is saying over here, whoever is an Israelite, a child of Israel, and is being circumcised, okay, he has menucha. Menucha, it's translated into the English word rest, but it's more than rest. It's an internal peace, internal kind of fulfillment. That's what menucha is about. And he has menucha in the year of the Shemitah. Okay. Now, the seventh year, we have to remember that in Hebrew, the name for the seventh year is Shemitah. And the word Shemitah is coming from the letters, the Shoresh, Shin, Mem, Tet. Shin Mem Tet, Shamot, means let go. So what is the name of the seventh year? The year of letting go. It's not called in Hebrew the seventh year, it's called the year of letting go. Letting go of what? The race. The race of making more and more business. Today, it is not that understood, because even in Israel of today, that the Shemitah applies to, the Shemitah does not apply outside Israel, but only a very small percentage of the population in Israel are farmers. Israel is more industry and commerce land, and you don't need the farming is so industrialized that you don't need too many farmers. You can make enough with less farmers with all of this advanced technology of farming. Okay, still you have this issue. Okay, the concept is very strong. How come you come to a year that you have to simply let go from developing the land, developing the crops, planting, finding different ways to expand the crops by fertilization? You cannot fertilize, you cannot do anything of development of the land itself. And that is really not just planting and harvesting and selling it. You have to let go of that. And what the Zohar is saying, on one hand, it's a let go. On the other hand, it is true inner rest. Lanuach ba, he can rest on that year. And that's why it's called Zenikra Shabbat Haaretz, that the Shabbat of the land. Vada yesh ba cherut. And then the Zohar says, it means it has, in that issue that is called the Shabbat, there is cherut. Cherut means real liberty. Okay, real liberty. And what does it mean, real liberty? Min haklipot. Real liberty from the klipot. Menucha yesh ba min hadinim. It's a liberty from the judgments. What are klipot? Klipot are the results of our misdoings of the past. The negativity that is being accumulated, and that negativity simply delays our success, blocks the flow of fortune and bliss in our lives. This is called klipot. Okay? That energy called klipot, and it's also called judgments. It's like two sides of the same thing. Kmo she-shabbat imenuchat kol, the same way that Shabbat, the seventh day, is a rest for everything, kach shmita, the seventh year of the land, it's also the rest for everything. Menucha l'ruach v'laguf, it's a rest for the body and for the soul. Rest from what? Because all our lives, we are fighting, says the Zohar, we are fighting the klipot and the judgments. That's our job. Okay. Let me try now to translate it into our modern language. Okay? First of all, what is the main work, daily work, of every human being? There are two kinds of work. One kind of work is what looks superficially as work. You get up in the morning, you go to your office, you go to your business, you open your store, you go to the field if you're a farmer, you go to the factory if you are in the industry or whatever. And work means that you go and you do all kinds of stuff that allows you some income daily, monthly, yearly, on the project, depends, but that's work. Okay? However, it looks like this is not the complete definition of work. When we go deeper to the spiritual aspect, work, the real work of a human being, is the work that we do in order to generate completion out of incomplete reality. Reality is incomplete. For instance, I want to live in a house, but in the place I want to live, there's no house. There's just some rocks and dirt and soil and whatever. So what do I have to do? I need to get to buy the land, okay? Let's say I own the land. So now I need to get an architect, I need to get permits, I need a lot of stuff until I get the permits. Now I have to find a constructor, okay? Now I have to find all kinds of other people that are good with the work. I have to find the materials, and finally, when I put everything together, luckily, within a certain amount of time, I have a place I can move in and live in. Okay, things that, same thing, you know, I'm hungry. Okay, so let's say I own some land. You can't just eat the rocks or the soil. You have to prepare it for the planting. You have to decide what you're going to plant. Then you have to spend money on preparing the land, fertilizing the land, cleansing it from all kinds of pests, and stuff like this, and then make the plant, and then treat it until finally you have some food. It will take a while, but you can turn a desolated piece of land into a land that is bearing fruits and income, also in livelihood. That's on the physical plane. That's every person's work. You take stuff that is broken, incomplete, you put it together either for yourself or for somebody else, and then in return you get what is called livelihood. Okay? Some people have more talent in doing that. Some people have less. Some people can make just enough to survive. Some people never can make it enough to survive. So always they're losing, and therefore they're always like feeling depleted, and you know, it's a kind of being a loser because you lose every month. How much did you earn? How much did you spend? Wow, I lost a lot of money this month and the next month and the previous month and so on and so forth. And some people, they make much more money than they can spend. So they become richer every month, every year. Okay, that's how you divide humanity. But the question is, the great question is, what makes the difference between people who are successful and people who are not successful? So, a lot of research was done about it. A lot of money was spent on different ideas about what makes people successful. And then a few decades ago, the world of psychologists has been changed. I know everybody has jokes about psychologists. Everybody knows jokes about psychologists. Why? Because for many years, people went to the psychologist, and the method was, tell us what hurts you. And then for years, you go and you talk about what hurts you. And, you know, somehow, somebody was willing to listen to what hurts you, and then you paid him money, but he was willing to listen to that the next week, and the next, and another week, and another week. Anyway, you spend the time, and it looks like it took the burden off your chest because you had somebody who listened to yourself and did, yes, you've been abused. Yes, it was horrible. I understand your pain. I understand your anger, and so on and so on. But a few decades ago, many psychologists decided that this goes nowhere. And they started to go towards a different direction. And this direction was called positive psychology. Yes, you went through a lot of trouble and pain and misery and so on. And we understand you are full of pain. But we have a question. We want to deal with this issue. And the issue is like this. What is that you want to do with your life? That's called positive psychology. And that trend started a few decades ago, and it is much more, numbers show, research is showing, it is much more productive than just talking about what's wrong with your life. If you basically focus on what is good and what is that you want to do in your life. And Kabbalistically, basically, you can bring it down to one thing. If you want to be successful in everything you do, instead of being focused on what's wrong, you should be focused on what should be done, what should be good. Or can explain it differently. Instead of focusing on the problem, you should focus on the solution and focus outside the box on how can you do it better. Okay? And then came out a concept that is called positive psychological capital, which means people who are successful, they have what is called positive psychological capital. What does it mean? Positive psychological capital. The ability of a person to be really a successful human being everywhere, every aspect of life, which means family, community, relationship, health, and money. It's all about the ability of the person to hold on to optimism, hope, excitement, trust in the good. Okay, I make it really short, but that's, and exactly this fits exactly what we study for thousands of years in Kabbalah and in Judaism, and exactly what Parashat Behar is speaking about. Okay, something that is the most important asset or capital of every human being. And what does it mean? The name of the parasha is Behar. And Rashi is starting already in the beginning with a thousands of years old question, which says, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe be'har Sinai, the beginning is, and God speaks to Moses on Mount Sinai, speak to the children of Israel and tell them about the seventh year and the 50th year, the Jubilee. Okay? And all sages are saying, all the mitzvot have been given on Mount Sinai. It doesn't have to mention that they were given on Mount Sinai. Why here? You have to mention that it was given on Mount Sinai. It is not normal because all the mitzvot were given Mount Sinai, but it doesn't say they were given because it's understood they were given Mount Sinai. Why here? It should be mentioned. And the question is very simple. You know, in English you say, when people speak about two things that have nothing to do with each other, you say, you know, that's, you know, what's this is apples and oranges. You're talking about one thing, but it belongs to something totally else. Mount Sinai is outside of the land of Israel. Shemitah is in the land of Israel. So in Hebrew, instead of saying, what are you talking about? This is apples and oranges. In Hebrew, you say, what's the connection between Shemitah and Mount Sinai? That's a common Hebrew, even if you're not religious, that's what you say. What's the connection between Shemitah and Mount Sinai? Okay? Basically, it's quoting Rashi, that wrote it 1,000 years ago, and he also quoted it from more older sayings. Everything, all the details of all the mitzvot were given on Mount Sinai. Why do we have to add up that this is on Mount Sinai? Okay? And the answer is, because he doesn't answer. Rashi does not answer. He just gives us a hint. But the Zohar gives us the answer. And the Zohar says, when we are connected about that spiritual level that is called Shabbat, that is called sabbatical, that is called the Jubilee, all of them speak about connecting to that frame of reference, that layer, that state of mind, that is the state of mind of the high spiritual realm, that when you reach that place, you have, what the Zohar says, true rest. And what does mean true rest? Liberty. Let's say somebody thinks he has liberty, okay? He was liberated, which means by state law, he has all the rights for his property, whatever, you know, like it is written in many, many, many countries of this world right now, in the Constitution, you have liberty, you have all the rights for your own liberties. Nobody can take away not your money, not your health, not your possessions, not anything that belongs to your freedom, what you define as freedom. And you look at the person, it doesn't look like this person has liberty. Why? Because the Zohar says so, liberty means liberty from the judgments and the klipot. How do you know somebody does not have liberty from the judgments and the klipot? Very simple. You look at the person and it looks like all his rights are guaranteed. You know what? The person even has a lot of financial success. Let's say the person has money in the bank, he has nice savings. Okay? He has a house without any mortgage. Okay? He lives in a free society. Nobody can take away his savings and his home. Okay? Nobody can just burst into his house and take him to prison without any. You know what is the definition of modern liberties, of a modern democratic society? You look at the person, he doesn't look liberated. Why? He has or she inner judgments. And what does that mean? The person is simply loaded with anxieties, with hatred, with fears. And these anxieties could be about losing all your money, gaining weight, becoming old. There's so many anxieties. Anxieties, maybe one day I'm going to lose everything. Maybe my spouse is going to betray me. Maybe my children are going to leave me alone and we'll never see them again. Maybe they already did it. Which means, as long as a person has fears, angers, upset, all kinds of negative emotions, you are not liberated. And that means that your positive psychological capital is very low. Could be that you inherited a lot of money and assets from your parents. Could be that you made a lot of money through any kind of business you did, whatever, and it was very honest. Everything was, but you still, as long as you still have anxieties, fears, upset, anger issue, and stuff like this, you are not liberated. So basically, you are, maybe legally you have liberty, but mentally, psychology already defined it, what the Zohar was saying, you are a slave. Your positive psychological capital is so low that you feel poor and you don't behave like you're rich because you're really poor. Because it does not matter how much money you have and how much money people think you have, what matters is how do you feel about how much spiritual capital, psychological, positive psychological capital do you have? And that's exactly what Parashat Behar is about. In order to reach that place, you have to go through the steps, either 7 steps till you reach Shabbat or 50th stage till you reach the Jubilee. Shabbat and Jubilee are not just dates in the calendar. These are states of mind. These are states of mind of true liberty. How do you achieve that? And here the Zohar continues completing all the stuff that we learned through all the parashot of the book of Leviticus. Remember, when we said that the book of Leviticus is very special, when we just started to learn about the book of Vayikra, Leviticus, we learned that in the book of Bereshit, the first book of the 5 books of Moses, known as Genesis, it's the beginning of the year, so we have an opportunity as the new year is coming to embrace the new opportunity that is called the new year. So what do? We relearn our business. We relearn how to create generosity and loving and kindness like Abraham. we learn how to control gevurah, becoming not just stronger than judgment, not just using gevurah, which means vigor and empowerment, but also learning how to be a hero, which means overcoming negativity from Isaac. And then learning how to put that together in everyday's life, and this is called Jacob. And how to manifest it, that's about Joseph. So we have that in the book of Genesis, just I made it really short. And after you learned how to activate the original, how do you call it, program of everyday's life, which is without those states of mind of Abram that are symbolized by Abram, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, you can't deal with life properly. Now, after that, now you have to wage war against your slavery. Everyone is in Egypt. Everybody has his own slavery. And this is the book of Exodus. And now, after we finish the book of Exodus, now you're free, you have liberty. You have to realize what's your calling. What does it mean, true liberty? And that's why the book of Vayikra means, and he called. That's God's calling to each one of us. The whole book of Vayikra, the whole book of Leviticus. And Bahar basically sums it up. Usually Bahar and Bechukotai are being read together as the last week of the book of, the last reading of the book of Vayikra. When it's a leap year, like this year, so this week in Israel it's being read Bahar, and next week it's Bechukotai. So what does the Zohar say about it? There is a secret, the Zohar says. I'm reading from verse 9 in the Zohar of Asulam. Omnam Zehu, so there is a secret over here, which means this is not something you can see obviously with your eyes. And it's not something you understand, most people understand logically with their brain. And that's how we learn. Ketuv, Zacharnu et hadaga shel nochal b'Mitzrayim chinam. It is said, in the book of Numbers, chapter 11, when the Israelites are complaining, we remember how we ate the fish in Egypt for free. What does it mean? Did you get free lunches in Egypt? You were slaves. You didn't get any salary. You were somebody else's property. You were Pharaoh's private property. He could do with you whatever he wanted. Like it was the law of slavery in many countries around the world, even just a few centuries ago. And some countries, there's also yet slavery. Okay? What does it mean we ate for free? You worked for it. And the Zohar says, chinam, it means without making a blessing over your food. The Israelites, when they were slaves, they did not have any mitzvot. They didn't have to bless on the food. They were out of it. Why? Shelo haya aleinu b'mitzrayim ol shelemala. Because in Egypt, we did not have what is called the yoke of heavens. What is the yoke of heavens? Come and see, says the Zohar. Bo re, avadim p'turim me'ol malchut shelemala. Slaves are exempt from the mitzvot. Why? Says the Zohar as forward. They're exempt from the yoke of heavens. They don't have to be worried about heavenly, whatever, punishment and reward and stuff like this. You are property of your master and you serve in your master. You cannot serve two masters at the same time. You cannot serve your human master and at the same time serve the creator. It's like either or. What does it mean? Mao ol malchut shamayim. So what does it mean, the yoke of heavens? וכאותו השור שנותנים עליו תחילה עול כדי לעבוד עמו, ולהוציא ממנו טוב לעולם, ואם אינו מקבל עליו עול ההוא, אינו עושה כלום. כך צריך האדם לקבל עליו עול מלכות שמיים בתחילה. אחר כך יעבוד בו כל מה שצריך. ואינו אינו מקבל עליו עול הזה תחילה, אינו יכול לעבוד. You can compare it, says the Zohar, to an ox. Let's say you're a farmer, and your cow gave birth to a calf. You raise that calf, and at a certain age, the calf is old enough, you put a yoke over him. If you've seen rodeo shows in America, when this kind of an ox gets the not just a yoke, but also somebody sits on that yoke, they go crazy. Why? They don't like a yoke. Who likes a yoke? Who likes to be committed, you know, to something excel, something higher than me? So the Zohar says, you put the yoke over the ox, the young ox, and you see. If you can make him accustomed to it, and then the ox does not throw away the yoke, it does not go wild anymore, then you can harness to the yoke, you can harness a plow or a wagon or anything that he can do some work with it, you now have an asset. Why? You can use the ox for work, and for that you're going to feed the ox. But what if this ox does not want to accept the yoke? He cannot get used to it. He's going crazy, he's wild, cannot. What do you do with the ox? Are you going to spend money on giving a place to sleep, a place to stay, and feeding him every day? No, you're going simply send him to the slaughter. At least you can sell his meat and skin and bones and so on, they make money out of that, because it's good for nothing. Same thing says the Zohar with a human being. If a human being, every human being must make a choice, who is my master? If my master is my fears, hates, lust, all that is connected to the body, needs, desires, the beastly needs and desires, if I am enslaved to that, I'm good for nothing. What does it mean? A person that is committed only to his internal desires, which basically it's called judgments, he is a slave. He is a slave to the evil inclination, to the body desires. He is enslaved to his yearns and whatever emotions that sprout in him, and he's good for nothing. What does it mean? Psychologically, there is a term for it. The person does not have positive psychological capital. Why? Everything upsets him. Everything gets him scared. And if he's not, let's say the person is not scared at all. He has the guts. He goes, he makes the business deals. He's risking himself, but he makes a lot of money. However, he is now enslaved to the power hunger. He's enslaved to sexual lust. So he gets himself mixed with, could be either sex, all kinds of, he's enslaved to other people's recognition. He is enslaved to drugs, he is enslaved. We know the disease. All of those diseases that are now recognized, basically as lack. The person has everything, maybe. He made a lot of money, but what matter is your positive psychological capital. Why? As long as you are a slave to anything in your physical dark evil inclination, which means the body needs and urges, and what is called ego, the ego of about power and stuff like this, you're poor. You're poor. It doesn't matter what people say about you. You are poor. You have very little ability to deal with life. Then you will see that a person like this is good for nothing. It's like every day, every month, every year you go through, it's spent on worries, chasing after your lust, your needs and stuff like this. Real, true fulfillment is impossible to reach. Only some momentary, which means high and by, very short-lived excitement and fulfillment, because you are a slave to your body consciousness. However, the only other way, the only way to achieve true liberty is when you take the yoke of heavenly kingdom. That yoke of heavenly kingdom means you have on one hand a commitment to fight. To fight who? To fight the anger, the lust, all of those beastly emotions that you can see them in your dog, in your cat, in other animals, either it's fear, whatever. Since the moment you choose one master, which is God, which means you choose that your calling is to overcome all those mental limitations that are coming from the physical limitations, the moment you choose that, this is the only way for redemption. And this redemption is called immortality. What does it mean, immortality? The Zohar is teaching us, when God says to Adam, the day you will eat from the tree of knowledge, you will surely die. Adam ate from the tree of knowledge, and he died only 930 years later. Where's the punishment? All the sages are asking, where's the punishment? And the Zohar is answering, the moment Adam and Eve ate from the tree of knowledge, they started to die. Which means, every time we get insulted, we get scared, we get upset, we get angry, and in that moment, we feel darkness, despair, we are focused on feeling how terrible life is about, we are disconnected from the light of the Creator, we're disconnected from our calling, and this is when we get a touch of death. Sometimes the touch of death is so powerful that it kills a person. You know, some people from fear, they get a heart attack or something like this and they die. Some people get from aggravation. We know it has an effect on our health and our lives. And some people are basically living dead, which means there's no little bit even of life left in them. It's like they're zombies because they're totally controlled by the power of death. So what is the power of death? These are the klipot, these are the judgments, the fears, the pain, all of those moments of failure in which, yes, we were insulted, we were abused, but what the Zohar is teaching us, we are not here to be right. We're here to be the light. So if we are being in suffering, total, like terrible injustice, the question is, as the modern psychology is learning, not to focus on what was wrong in what happened, to focus on it happened. What are you going to do now that you really want? What's your passion right now? In spite of what happened. That's called the positive psychological capital, which means that is immortality. The immortality is the ability of a human being to go through challenges, failures, attacks by others who are not right, that abused you, abuse your body, abuse your rights, did all terrible stuff to you or to your dear ones, and you still do not allow that to kill you. People say, that almost killed me. That's That's really death for me. It felt like dying. When we allow death to crawl in, it's only when we get rid of the yoke of the heavenly kingdom. If we accept the yoke of the heavenly kingdom, it means that whatever is happening to us is given to us by the Creator, so we can excel, ascend, overcome the pain, overcome the injustice, and be enlightened. Shabbat, the seventh year, the Jubilee, these are all, and studying in Mount Sinai Revelation, Behar Sinai, Mount Sinai, they're all giving us one thing. You can go above it. Your salvation, your healing, your richness, your capital, it's all by accepting the yoke of heaven. What is the yoke of heaven? We spoke about it. We learned about it in Parashat Emor. This is awe. When instead of allowing the fear and the anger, the frustration and the hatred to crawl in and kill us. What do I mean kill us? So I won't die that day. But my energies, my capital has been diminished because I lost most of it because I became a victim to my own reaction, to the hatred, to the feeling of injustice. Instead of saying, this happened. If that emotion rose and awakened in me, it was there who knows how long, who knows how many lifetimes. Could be it's there since the sin of Adam. And right now my yoke of heaven, my commitment is when I experience that death, I have to kill that death. How do you kill death? By focusing on life. How do you kill darkness? By focusing on the light. How do you kill failure? By focusing on success. How do you destroy distress and despair? By focusing and generating and creating hope. All the study of the Torah, all the meditations, all the prayers, it's all about one thing, to extend our ability to create exactly what I'm just saying right now. When we have the stronger, the bigger, the more expanded is the awe that we have, the awareness, the godly awareness that whatever happens, it's not about them, it's about me. It's about my relationship with the Creator, with His light. There's nothing else that is important. Do I let my emotions, do I let my logic, sick logic, kill me by convincing me, yes, I believe in God, but this was unfair, unjust, and I can't accept it, and I have to be upset about it. What are you doing right now? You're committing suicide because you replace the yoke of heavens, saying everything is for the good, and if I meet that negativity, I meet this angel of death, my job is to kill him. Because that is the job of humanity, no other job. So some people are making money through banking. Some people are making money through industry of making garments. Some people are making furniture. Other people are creating high-tech stuff and computers, hardware, and some people create software. Does not matter. The real job of every human being is kill death when you meet him. Why? The sin of Adam was submitting to death, submitting for the reaction. How do we correct it? Doesn't matter. Yes, again, it does not matter if the other person is right or wrong. Okay? Nobody gave us the power to be God's accountant or judge. Okay? Our job is not to let it kill us. And how do we connect to that immortality when we study what's given on Mount Sinai? When we study it as it says, the tree of life, the Torah is the tree of life for the ones holding on to it. If you're holding on to that consciousness, you are committed to fight death, which means no matter what happens, aggravation is illegal. Yes, we're human beings. We get aggravated. But the question is, don't we want to be those kind of people that can overcome the aggravation, that can overcome that horrible feeling of injustice, of abuse, be feeling abusive? Don't we want to be immortal? Don't we want to be those kind of people that are wise enough, that have that great positive psychological capital, which make us powerful enough, so all of those little things, big things, aggravations, things that are so angry, we do not let them kill us no matter what. How do we do that? Acquiring that consciousness. Which consciousness? So on Shabbat, on Shavuot, after the counting of the Omer, on the Shemitah, as we said, let go. Let go of the fear. Let go of the insecurity. Let go and let God. When you do that, you connect to the true calling of every human being. That is liberty. This is immortality. And I'll remind just one more thing. How do I know I'm immortal? You know, Methuselah, he lived 960 years. And you know what happened? On his 960th birthday, everybody came and celebrated his birthday, and everybody left home, and then he dropped dead. Okay? Maybe they dropped dead when everybody was still there in a birthday party. How many years do you need to live till you know you're immortal? You understand what I'm saying? And the answer is, if you went one day in which you did not let your beastly needs, desires, emotions, and judgments, and klipot kill you, giving up hope and stuff like this, you felt immortality for one day. If you could extend it to another day, so you had 2 days of immortality. And if you failed, and the third day you got aggravated and upset and you forgot, but you got back on your feet, and you continued, so you start feeling immortal all over again. This commitment is the only thing that really is liberating. Physical capital, like real estate, like money in the bank, investments, friends, family, that people are devoted to you. For a lot of people, you can see always people, it's not enough for them. Why? Because this is not liberty. Liberty is when you control the death inside you, because you are carrying the yoke of the heavenly kingdom. The commitment that I'm here, and that's my calling, to fight death, to fight aggravation, always to be positive, always to be elated, always to have hope and optimism. Why? Because I'm serving the only one purpose, immortality, serving the Creator by becoming closer to Him every day, every hour. Thank you so much, and good luck with this important job.